Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read. But today, doing something slightly different. This is not a main episode, it's not a usual episode. It's a little bit of bonus audio, a little bonus content, bonus discussion for the 4th of July weekend, the Independence Day celebrations in America, and also for people outside of America too. Because last night, Juliana and I watched Independence Day and thought, wow, this is actually quite a remarkable movie, very different from today's summer blockbuster movies. And later on in the evening, after we were talking about it and kind of getting our thoughts, getting our heads around the movie and what we liked about it, I was talking to Jesse Willis from the SFF Audio Podcast. And generally, we record our conversations in case they turn into podcasts or worthy podcast discussions. So the audio quality isn't fantastic on this, but hopefully you enjoy it. It wasn't meant to be a podcast, but it kind of turned into one as we were discussing what we like about Independence Day and what makes it different from the current crop of summer blockbuster movies, and my analysis of it as well there. So hopefully you enjoy this little bit of bonus audio here, and I'll catch you next time.
Have you seen the latest Star Trek?
No.
Ah, okay. We were just talking about it today. This evening, Juliana and I just watched Independence Day.
Did you see that trailer for the, what was it?
Honest Trailers.
Honest Trailers.
Yeah, of course. But that's one of the reasons. I watched part of it on a plane, like the first half of it on a plane a few months ago, and was like, this is really good, because I had it on VHS when I was younger, like when it came out, or maybe, you know, like in 96 or 97 or whenever it came out. I pre-ordered the VHS for that. And we were just talking about it and like just how good it is. Like how... It's just really, really good. We were talking, Juliana says it was like...
It's movie good. It would be a terrible novel.
It's the Fifth Element. Like, it's a movie from the mid-90s that you watch and go, wait, why don't they make movies like this anymore? And part of the reason we watched it was because we watched the Honest Trailers bit of it. Watched it on Blu-ray. Blu-ray is way better than the VHS that I had, because I think it was like a pan and scan, like, non... widescreen, what do you call it, like a 4x3 size. And it's just really, really good. And I, of course, I remembered most of the lines and most of the script and all the characters and stuff, but then I know more about movies and more about editing and, you know, and all that kind of stuff, and watching it then, like watching it again in that way, there's just loads of really, really clever stuff going on which passed me by the first 15 times I watched it when
how
I was
they did
16.
It, but you certainly appreciate it. I think you don't have to know how they did it to understand. You just know it has an effect.
Yeah, but like, you know, for one thing, there's what's his name, the radio technician Jeff Goldblum. I can't remember his name in this character in this.
David.
Thing.
That's really Matt. Jeff Goldblum.
Levinson or something.
David Levinson, yeah. And so his ex-wife is working in the White House, and for the first half of the film, she's wearing, like, I'm the left hand of the president, you know, I'm his aide or whatever it is, you know, like second in command or chief of staff. I'm not really sure what she is. I'm guessing chief of staff or something. And so she's always wearing that, and then at the end I always realized, oh yeah, everyone changes costume, everyone changes clothes at the end of the movie to fulfill their new roles. Like the old general, he gets his general's gear back in, the US president, he puts on his flight suit, everyone puts on different clothes. And then I realized the clothes that Jeff Goldblum's ex-wife wears, is she just wears literally the same kind of T-shirt as him, and the same, like, the vest top that he's got on, and the same shirt. I mean, it's not the same color shirt, but you think, oh, it's just a similar fashion. It's like, no, she is wearing his clothes now rather than the president's clothes. And I'd noticed that change of costume, but it really hit me just how blatant it was. And yet this is the first time I've noticed it, and it's the 15th time I've watched the movie.
Reading the script, it would be a lot more obvious, because it would say right on the page, dress her in the same thing so as to show that they have now become closer again.
No, I just think it's genius movie making on every level. Every single thing that happens at the end of the movie is either reaffirming something that happened at the very beginning, or is the opposite? So, you know, if, you know, he hates flying at the beginning of the movie and then he has to go to space. The other one wants to go to space but is turned down from NASA, you know, and that's their journey. Yeah. He tells his father from smoking a cigar, and then at the end he has to have a cigar. He doesn't want to get married to the girl and then gets married. Like, every single part of that is. But when it comes down to literally, like, what shirt somebody is wearing or what clothes somebody is wearing, you realize that this is what the, like, the director role at Emmerich must have said to, like, everybody. Okay, special effects crew, this is what you need. Costume people, this is what you need. Set dressing people, this is what you need. And everything flips around, which I was very impressed with, because, again, I knew that happens. I know that's how to make a good movie. But it's just so, I mean, maybe clinically done, and so obvious, like you say, if you read the script, it's all there. It's like, and now we will do the reversal of this, and now we will do the flip of this, and now we will reference this thing that went on, you know. And even Juliana said that. You said, oh, he said about the fireworks at the beginning, and then, like, the last line of the movie is like, hey, son, didn't I promise you fireworks? Yeah, dad! You know.
He didn't say dad. He's not his dad.
Yeah, but he is now his dad. That's the thing, yeah. So,
yeah, it works on a movie level. Definitely works on, especially as a, you know, a theater movie sort of thing.
Oh yeah, and that's what I say. Watching on Blu-ray is a big difference with the, you know, proper sound rather than on VHS.
One of the things I always remark about when I see these summer movies is how conservative the values at the end are. Right, no matter how broken the family is at the beginning,
yeah,
the values are always traditional family conservative values are always reaffirmed at the end.
Yeah.
No matter who's in it, no matter what it's about, that is the ultimate thing. And Scott, you know, like, the other day, he was talking about the movie The Mist on the chat, you know?
Yeah.
And he said how disappointed and offended he was by the ending of the movie.
No, that's the best ending of any movie. That
exactly.
Because it's...
But how much of the conservative family values are there? They're
none,
subverted.
None. Zero. Nothing.
That's exactly right.
But that's why Frank Darabont,
it's so good.
Who directed
it's so good because it goes the opposite direction and ruins what it should be, happy and life affirming.
Yeah,
right?
he was offered twice as much money. They said, just change the end and you can have twice as much money to make the movie. And he says, no, I'm going to stick with the end that I have and I'm going to do it. And it's got one of the best, worst endings of a movie ever. It's really good, and I'm glad. And I'm
the
glad.
The only thing similar is Chinatown, I would say.
Yeah, but I think that the end of The Mist, it kind of takes it to that level where you, I don't know, it took it to an extra level which I hadn't seen before. It's more than, oh, everyone dies in the end. It's in it, and then it just takes it there, and then to another step, and then to another step, and then a final step where you're kind of heartbroken. But the cool thing is, and this is the other thing, like, in that Honest Trailer clip that came up where they were talking about, hey, and remember the time in the 90s where summer blockbusters were uplifting stories? And it's amazing that, like you say, when you say, oh, it confirms the conservative or, you know, family values and stuff like that. Yes, every single person becomes a hero. One person dies at the end, and it's what spurs action at the end. You know, there's it kind of like someone is a hero, someone dies and things. But then every single other person is a hero or is redeemed in some way. Like, you know, of course all the main hero characters are heroes, and then you've got Adam Baldwin, who is the commander of Area 51. He goes out and he's doing everything. Like, of course they need like one figure there that everyone needs to be able to identify with, but he gets the people in and loads the planes and stuff, and the stripper goes off and collects people in from upstairs, and everyone has a job and everyone has a moment as a hero. And even then the defense secretary or whatever his name is, even he gets a moment of you know, like, even when he's like, oh, you're fired and we're going to get in and we're going to get moving and stuff, you think, oh, he's like the bad guy. He's the only bad human in the entire movie. And even he is redeemed at the end because he sits down and says a prayer with the Jewish father. Everyone is reaffirmed. Every single person, it turns out to either be a hero or is redeemed in some way. And it's so uplifting.
Don't you like that it's so American, even though Roland Emmerich is not?
Yeah, he's German or Austrian or something, isn't he?
Yeah, but he's Austrian. Obviously studied the what you know, what works.
But I but it works so well. It makes you feel so good because it is so conservative. The married people,
guess,
the divorced people get back together.
I haven't thought about that movie since it came out, or actually just this last week when I saw that on this movie trailers thing. But I think about RoboCop a lot. And it actually has the conservative family ending as well.
Yes, it does, yeah.
But it's at least you have the sense that, okay, well, yeah, it's conservative family ending, but his life is still fucked. I mean, he's got, like, a brainstem, a little bit of a face, and the rest of him is robot, right?
Yeah.
But
he's a more human robot. He gets his humanity back.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, the fact that they made 2 and 3 and whatever remake they're working on, it's like...
Yeah, but that doesn't
They really don't understand the good part of that movie is the dystopia.
Yes.
Is so well realized, and then
I'd buy that for $1.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's the right movie, is it? Or is that Starship
Troopers? No, it is. It is the right movie.
No,
by the way, that's from a podcast, a story I put in the feed a long time ago. That line is from C.M. Kornbluth.
Oh, okay.
It's not a dollar, though. It's a quarter.
I'd buy that for a quarter.
Yeah. And it's from it's actually, what's interesting is that dystopia the story is, I can't remember the name of it. But it's a set in a... Oh, yeah, it's called The Marching Morons.
Yes.
Future.
Yes, I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's a terrible story, really. But it's very influential and very... It's a smart story, it's just badly written.
Okay.
And very influential on a lot of science fiction, including that it's from a television show that all the stupid people watch.
Yeah.
A reality television show where it's sort of like a cross between Benny Hill and a game show.
Yeah.
Before the more modern reality shows, I guess, where they make people eat bugs and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's just like a guy is offered a whole bunch of things, you know, like The Price is Right sort of thing.
Yeah.
And so it becomes a catchphrase that everybody says. And that's how it enters the thing. And it's true. In the movie, that scene is just a little clip, but there's thousands of lots of little ads in the movie that give you the sense of the world that is so fucked.
Yeah. But the thing is, it works because in the end, RoboCop, and coming back to these conservative values, RoboCop is... the hero, like, he comes out against the corporations and comes out against that and kind of rallies the people round, you know, it's that. And again, that seems to be missing from these, like, these summer blockbusters in science fiction at the moment, because you just, again, it's like you just see this stuff, and even Star Trek Into Darkness, there's a lot of lightness, but then it's just like, why does the bad guy have to be, like, why can't the good guys be a government that we all want to be part of, or not all part of, but like, why does the bad guy have to be from the military in that movie, and the good guys have to be from, well, who are the good guys, you know, then, like, they're the,
I haven't seen the new one, but I don't plan to, because I thought the last one was so terrible.
Well,
sort of bankrupt for ideas, so they recycle the
oh
the
yeah,
name.
Totally, it's all recycled, it is a good movie. But, like, when we watch it, and again, Juliana, when we're taking we were walking back with the Blu-ray back to the video store, and we're pretty much like that movie can't stand up against Independence Day. And Independence Day isn't even seen as, like, an amazing movie. It's not even, like, high ranked on, you know, the Rotten Tomatoes or the IMDb, you know, looked up there. It's only got, like, a 6.4 rating. But as a popcorn movie, as a summer movie that you actually want to come out of it going, yeah!
Also as a science fiction movie.
Yeah, as a science fiction, yeah.
I think Day and The Fifth Element is just, like, really good science fiction movies, and it's very difficult for any other movie to get close to that entertainment and that fun.
But it's difficult to do it now because
that's the key word. It's fun. So have you guys seen this movie? I can't believe they made a movie like this. It's called White House Down.
Yeah.
It's in theaters now.
That's the one in the Honest Trailers. They say blowing up American landmarks before you couldn't do it, and then it's, I guess you can do it again because it's, I think it's from the trailer that they blow up the White House
too soon, right? For 11 years or whatever.
Nah, I mean the thing is, when you watch Cloverfield was the first movie that I watched post 9/11, where I was like, oh, people, you actually know what skyscrapers look like when they fall down. And I mentioned that when we were watching Independence Day, that it showed, like, the next morning, New York and the big spaceships floating away. And, you know, the Statue of Liberty is laying on its side. And the Twin Towers are there, and the tops are missing off them. Like, the tops of the towers have been blasted down. And we're like, yeah, but now we know that if you knock down, you knock off those top parts of the tower, the bottom parts of the tower might fall down as well. You know, it's like, and Cloverfield felt like, for me, the first post 9/11 destroying buildings kind of movie that I'd see, that, you know, with those when you actually see the building fall down and it's not all clean, it's all dust, it's this big pile of dust that blows up and you're like, oh yeah, I guess that's what movies look like now when monsters knock them over. Yeah. Anyway, White House Down, you were saying about that they blow.
Well, I think, you know, this is like, I've read and seen or heard interviews with people who talk about, you know, the formula that Hollywood uses to make these movies. But the formula is, I mean, it was embodied in Independence Day, right? That movie used all the formula to the nth degree, and that's why it was the big popcorn movie of that summer, whatever. It's from the 90s, right?
Yeah, 95, 96.
Right, okay. So the movies that don't do as well, like for example, I Am Legend, I think did pretty good, but it didn't do as well as the other one, Independence Day, because it had all this stuff that wasn't really in sort of outside the formula stuff. Like, it had cool stuff, but it...
I thought it was a pretty good movie.
It is a good movie. It's not... the ending's a terrible mess. No matter which ending it is, they're all terrible messes.
I only saw the official one on the DVD ending, I guess.
Yeah, there's two different endings on there. I'm not sure which one is the official one anymore, but both of them are not the book ending, and book is that's the title. Either way, they've got the title wrong.
Yeah,
in the movie. So the book, but you know, often don't. You can't make Independence Day the book a good book, because it is designed to be of the medium.
Yes,
right.
And I think, like, that's what they did.
There's no Shakespeare that is good on screen as it is in the theater.
Yes,
right? Even if you do Romeo and Juliet with, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio and guns instead of swords or whatever, it's still on screen. It's just not quite as good.
No.
It's not designed for that medium. And
I think that's why Independence Day works so well, is because it embraces everything. And also, I know it's weird to say this, but we were laughing right from the beginning. There's lots of really funny stuff in it. And I think what I could kind of see the editing or writing trick that they did. They made sure that the funny stuff was always at the end of a shot or the end of a take or at the end of a scene. So if it wasn't funny, they could end the scene 3 seconds earlier and miss out the joke.
Mm-hmm.
And then they could just... Say again?
That sounds right.
Yeah. So every single line, every single funny thing happened, like, at the end of it, and then you would cut away and see something else. And sometimes you'd cut away and see something else, and there wouldn't be a joke there, but I was thinking, did they have a joke there? And then it wasn't funny enough, so they just cut away 2 seconds early or 3 seconds early. And that is so crucial, because I remember watching this scene in Transformers, the movie, which is, again, big budget silliness and things, and there's this bit where somebody has to make a phone call, and they make this whole joke thing about he calls up, and there's a call center, and it's a call center in India, and he doesn't understand, and he's got to get a credit card, so he has to run across, and there's, like, robots coming at him and shooting, and there's out in the desert and all this kind of stuff, and there's this joke there, which, in the end, just didn't work at all. But
it wasn't very... It's not as good. in general, funny. But also it's badly edited. And
no, it's not. What my point is that if it was a throwaway joke or just a small comment at the end of a take, they could have just gone, okay, that's not funny enough, let's cut it out. But the scene relied. The joke was part of the plot. The joke was part of the scene. The joke was how somebody got from one place to the other. And because it was a bad joke, it was bad. But also because it was a funny thing, it undermined the seriousness of the situation. Whereas the jokes in Independence Day are relief from the situation. Do you understand? Like, if there's something if there's something important going on, the joke is the relief instead of being like the solution or the cause or something like that, you know?
No, I hear you. Yeah, I think Scott was talking about that with Jurassic Park on his podcast recently.
Must go faster, yeah.
Yeah, there's that's in both, right?
Yeah.
But the Steven Spielberg is mostly very good at making his movies work. I mean, I was thinking about how shitty an idea E.T. is unless you're 6 years old, in which case it's awesome.
But it works. But
as an adult, you're like, wait a second. Yeah. Why are they flying?
But it's just magic.
Just
it just goes...
Glowing finger, I don't get it.
It becomes a fairy tale. It literally is a fairy tale. And at the end, they held hands and flew to here. You know, it's that same kind of thing.
Yeah, they were making fun of it on Futurama. Mm. That's a really smart show. I actually, you know, I got into an argument with some Christian podcaster who does science fiction stuff a long time ago.
Uh-oh.
And he always has like the worst arguments. But I was saying, you know, something, and then now if you want to talk about good science fiction on screen, I'll tell you, Red Dwarf is the best. And the reason it's the best is not because the physics work, but because they actually think about actual science fiction stuff.
Well, Futurama's like that as well.
Yeah, exactly. And so they'll, you know, the physics don't make any sense, but in any particular episode, they'll be thinking about, like, you know, virtual reality whatever it is. It's always like very well thought through, and like the fact that they all live on a world where anyone can commit suicide at any time just by going to the suicide booth, that changes your outlook a lot.
Yeah.
And they actually have that outlook. Like, every once in a while they'll remind you, oh yeah, life is not actually as valued in certain respects when you can cut limbs off at random and grow them back.
It flavors the whole thing. It's like the clock striking 13. You go, oh, this isn't us. This isn't us now. Yeah,
yeah, it's good stuff. There was another one.
Oh, like, also, another thing at the end of the latest Star Trek, Star Trek Into Darkness, they kind of just destroy loads of buildings, and it seems like, I think the latest Superman as well, the Man of Steel, at the end there's lots of buildings being destroyed, and certainly with Avengers and all these other ones, you know, it's just building destroy, building destroy, building destroy. And I worked out something, which why I think Independence Day is so uplifting.
Mm-hmm.
And these other, like, more recent popcorn movies are not so uplifting, is because the buildings being destroyed, first of all, you see the people inside the buildings as they're getting blown up by the city-sized spaceships. It's like, in Independence Day, it's like, okay, they're going to destroy this building. Here's someone outside the building. Or here's someone on the building. They're dead. Here's somebody in the building next door. He's looking at it. Now he's dead. Here's somebody in a car. You see this person in the car? Now he's dead. You see this other person? You know him from earlier? Now he's dead. This person in this tunnel, now he's dead. This person survived. This person is dead.
Yes.
And you actually see every person, well, not every person who dies, but you see representatives of every person in every situation around that building or city being destroyed. And you look at them, and then you see them die. This is super effective in Independence Day, because this is not the finale of the movie. And I didn't realize how important this was to the movie and how well it works. until now I see it after watching things like Avengers and after watching Star Trek Into Darkness and these other ones where, and say Transformers where, and I can't think of other movies, but now at the top of my head, but they have the big action finale in a city where the city gets destroyed and the buildings get destroyed and the whole city blocks just wiped out and things smashed apart and you know, well, you go, well, how many people were in that building? There's thousands of people die. First of all, you don't get to see them before they die. You don't get to see that look in their eye of them going, oh, and then the building blowing up. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, their collateral damage in what the heroes are doing. So along with what the heroes are doing, thousands of people are dying, and yet they're just dying alongside. And this is the action finale. This is the end of the movie. This is the resolution of the troubles that have come up so far because of the robots or aliens from outer space or anything, is the smashing up of buildings. Whereas Independence Day, the ending is nothing to do with the cities. The ending is them destroying the threat before other cities get destroyed. But the cities being destroyed is the low point halfway through the movies rather than the high point at the end of the movies. Do you understand? It's actually, yep. It's the low point rather than the triumph. And I realize now that in like the end of Avengers, it's like all these people flying around and buildings being smashed up and they're like, yeah, let's get this paper ray. And, you know, there's this nuclear strike launched against New York and it's like, but that's... I don't want to see buildings being destroyed as the triumph. I want to see buildings being destroyed as the low point, which is the low point, and in Independence Day, that is the low point of the movie. Even though you're going, wow, this is amazing all the time, you're seeing people look into the face of death and then being swallowed by death, and you're like, shit. And then at the end, when the humans win, you're like, yeah, that gets it back. That gets everyone back for all those buildings being destroyed. Whereas at the end of Avengers, you're just like, well, that building's been destroyed. And at the end of all these other big, stupid movies, the buildings are destroyed. And you're just like, well, I guess they won, did they? Who's going to pay for that big building? Whereas Independence Day, I never felt that. You know, you always felt, wow, these guys are really under it at the moment.
It's true enough.
Anyway, that's my last observation about Independence Day and why I think it works.